Welcome to Hockey Perspectives Radio. Matthew Collar with Timo Seppa. Timo, how are you?
Hey, Matt, doing good. Ready for another preview episode here.
Yes, very much me too. A couple in just a few days here is we, like every NHL team, scrambles to get ready for the NHL season in just a few days. And, you know, just teams trying to make a lot of decisions on rosters and all that. So things should get pretty interesting in the next couple of days. Timo, how are you preparing yourself for the beginning of the season?
What do you mean, like doing a bunch of push-ups or something?
Well, have you practiced?
Plenty of jumping jacks.
No, well, I got a good one for you. Leaning up against walls, waiting for players to come out of locker rooms. How's that?
Yeah, no, not that, no. As a matter of fact, I have to say, I mean, I don't want to get off on a tangent. It's actually been surprising how few moves there's been so far this week. I mean, who knows if there'll be a flurry of stuff before games start. But, I mean, basically guys getting waived is more or less the exciting stuff that's been going on here in the first week. But if you're talking about the first weekend of games, I'm looking forward to going to opening night at with the Devils at the Islanders, and then I'll be back on Monday afternoon for a Martin Luther King Day game with Tampa against the Islanders. Trying to get to see the Rangers, but it's probably a tough ticket to see them on their opening night against Pittsburgh, but crossing my fingers on that one.
Yeah, I'm going to be covering the Sabres game, of course, against the Flyers to open their season, and just what I'll be watching for sure is Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Clearly the best playoff series of the entire Stanley Cup playoffs last year, so I really want to see that one. See if there's any, you know, any bad blood still hanging around.
Can you have bad blood in game one? I guess you can, but with those two rivals.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking for. And also, you know, the Rangers in Boston, I guess, what kind of shape is everybody in for that game? Because you could see, you know, those are two of the toughest teams in the league. And, you know, some other rivalry matchups too. But, I mean, I guess those are the ones I'll be watching. And then,
yeah, and everybody wants to see Rick Nash in his first couple games with the Rangers, I'm sure, too.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Tuukka Rask is now a starting goaltender, and a lot of the stuff we talked about with the Eastern Conference. And in the West, you know, L.A., Chicago. I mean, there's a part of me that still feels like Chicago would have had a lot better chance of going deep in the playoffs if they hadn't lost Marian Hossa to a brutally stupid hit by Rafi Torres. So, you know, I'm kind of interested in that, too. There's going to be a lot of hockey to watch for the weekend, so I'm looking forward to it. And, of course, we're going to have a guest here in a few minutes. I should have already mentioned that, but I didn't. Jonathan Willis. He's no Tom Awad, but no, just kidding. Jonathan Willis is going to come up with us next, and he's going to help us out with the Western Conference. John is a pretty big deal. I've given him a hard time before, but he's a very, very talented writer, does Grantland stuff and Edmonton Journal. I mean, he's the real deal. So he's going to come up with us in just a couple minutes. And but, of course, we have to plug our book, Timo.
Yes, absolutely. Once again, if you haven't gotten Hockey Perspectives 2012-2013, what is wrong with you?
Seriously.
So you can get the hardcover, actually the paperback old-fashioned kind of book like I like, Amazon.com. Or you can get an instant digital download just from our website at hockeyperspectives.com. So if you're still drafting for your fantasy league and need that information right away, you can go there. For folks that have gotten the Vokoda spreadsheet downloaded from the website, there is an update on that. It's prorated for 48 games. And also the team field is there now for the players. So if you've already gotten that, or if you haven't, you can get that from the website.
Very cool. And it's really good. I have it. And also, Timo, by the way, you forgot to mention we are also now on iTunes. It only took a full year.
You know, we're there now, so this episode should be picked up on iTunes right away, pretty much. So working good so far, and we're on iTunes.
Yeah, we have to give a shout to our friend Matt for helping us out with that. So because we are just not inclined enough to figure out how to do that. So anyway, Jonathan Willis coming up next. We're going to preview the entire Western Conference in similar fashion to the way we did the East. If you didn't catch that one, search for it on iTunes. You'll be able to find it, Hockey Prospectus Radio. Listen to that one. And then Jonathan Willis coming up next. He will talk all about how Edmonton is going to win the Cup.
Yeah. Want to hear that one.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll have something on that. Anyway, Jonathan Willis when we come back here on Hockey Prospectus Radio. Welcome back here to Hockey Prospectus Radio. Matthew Collar, along with managing editor of Hockey Prospectus, Timo Seppa. And joining us on the line now is our good pal and a terrific writer. Writes for us at Hockey Prospectus, played a big role in the book, but he also writes for the Edmonton Journal and Grantland as well, Jonathan Willis. John, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm happy to be here.
And I would assume, John, that you're pretty happy to have hockey back as well.
Yeah, I think most of us who cover hockey, we're pretty happy when the lockout ended.
Well, I got to say, though, John, I thought you did some really terrific work during the lockout in covering it, even though nobody actually wanted to be covering it. I thought you did some great stuff. I mean, I know that everybody's looking forward now, and you know we don't want to look back to what happened in the lockout, but there is a new collective bargaining agreement, and you know before we start getting into some of these teams in the Western Conference to preview them, I mean, what kind of stuck out to you with the new CBA, and I mean, was it worth it for everybody or what?
Well, I think monetarily it was worth it, and this to me was a pretty coldly calculated lockout. The owners knew what they wanted. They knew how they were going to get it. And, I mean, they dropped the player share hockey-related revenue from 57% to 50%. That's a 12% drop in player costs for them. And they got a long term. I didn't think we were going to get a 10-year term on this deal, but the NHLPA agreed to it. And I think that's probably bad news for when the CBA ends, but for the next 10 years, it means we get to go through hockey without having to put up with another one of these stoppages.
Right, and you know, John, Travis Zajac signed a 8-year, $46 million deal today. I mean, I think the players can be pretty okay with where they landed too.
Yeah, they're going to make their money. It's hard to feel sorry for them, even though they're going to make a little less than they would have otherwise, but they're still going to make their money.
And you know, John, I did get one tweet that Scott Gomez was bought out, so the Buffalo Sabres should pick him up. So, I mean, exciting times here, right? These buyouts.
Yeah, I think I hope there's actually going to be a few teams interested in Gomez despite his rather miserable 2011-12 season.
Yeah, if you're looking for a guy who can skate the puck from behind the net and pass the blue line on the power play and do absolutely nothing else for your team, that's Scott Gomez.
Wow. Ouch. And and by the way, Timo, Wayne Redden is out there. You've seen a little bit of him in the minor league, so, you know.
Yeah, nothing to write home about there, although, I mean, teams that are just looking for a warm NHL-caliber body on the blue line, Islanders, Ottawa, you know, whatever teams that are just, looking for, I'd say, a third pairing caliber guy. I guess he can fit the bill.
Yeah, maybe for whatever the league minimum is going to be now, I guess. So, John, before we move on, any last thoughts on how this CBA is going to change anything? I mean, it seems like the game is going to stay exactly the same, unlike the last time we came out of a lockout.
Yeah, there aren't any really massive shifts. I think the tightening of player contract terms is going to eliminate the worst of the obvious deals with fake years at the end of them, mm-hmm. which is great. And just knocking down hockey-related revenue should give us a year or two before the small market teams start dying again. And no major changes. I mean, this is very much a status quo CBA with just a little more money to the owners.
Hey, right. I actually have a question just about the game on the ice, and I don't know if it's been speculated on a ton, But obviously, coming out of the last lockout, I mean, you had, I mean, Matt was kind of alluding to there, you know, you had things that you, bones that you'd throw to the, you know, to the fans that would make the game, you know, more exciting. I mean, one of them was, I don't know that it was really a rule change, but how the rules were enforced, power play opportunities spiked tremendously in 2005, 2006. I mean, I haven't heard anything discussed about different ways how they're going to call the games or whatever, but I suppose I wouldn't find it entirely shocking if they, you know, if they called the game a little bit tighter and, you know, power play opportunities have been dipping ever since, you know, every year, to kind of bring that element back into the game, increase the scoring. I mean, it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world if they actually did call more penalties and bump up scoring a little bit that way.
Yeah, I agree that's a possibility. It doesn't sound like anybody's really 100% sure how they're going to call the rule book coming out of this lockout. Hopefully it's a little tighter. I don't think we'll see the kind of wholesale changes that really had to happen after the last lockout, but we might see some tweaks and a little more stringent enforcement. And I think that might even be necessary. The Oilers head coach, Ralph Kluger, was talking the other day about how he actually expects scoring to go down because with this compressed schedule, he thinks teams might be pressured to be a little more conservative, a little more careful, and they won't have as much gas in the tank, so they'll want to be more conservative. So, you know, we might see more power play opportunities, but if it's a small amount, we might not see an uptick in scoring.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, just on the sense that, you know, I saw a Winnipeg Rangers game last year where Winnipeg was, it was a third game in four nights in the New York area for Winnipeg, and they looked dead in that game. So, I mean, you can have that. I mean, on the other hand, you figure that teams are going to have to rely on their backup goalies more. So, to me, that's a factor that would increase scoring.
Yeah, it could well be.
You know, Lindy Ruff said the same exact thing, that he thought that scoring was actually going to go down. But I don't know. I'd like to see it be somewhere in the middle where we could still have a possibility of a guy scoring, you know, I don't know, 120 points or something like that, not in the 48-game season, but, you know, scoring at a really high rate, getting a lot of power play points, and have that excitement, but also not having it be ridiculous where every 2 seconds there's a power play and the games take forever. So I will be interested to see where it ends up. I feel like players being tired could also lead to a lot of mistakes and turnovers and lazy plays and things like that that end up being goals. So I guess we'll see. But if you guys are good to go, let's start talking about the Northwest here. Our Vokoda projections, that's the way we're going to do this. We're going to go from bottom to top and where the projections have a team, and then we'll all talk about, you know, what we think of it. So starting in the Northwest, we have, this might surprise some people, but Vokoda has Minnesota at the bottom, ranked in the 5 spot in the Northwest. And John, I don't know, does this surprise you at all, considering the moves that were made by Minnesota to get Zach Parise and Ryan Suter in the offseason?
Yeah, it surprises me a little. I don't think it's one of those things that I find a little surprising, but I don't think it's wholly unreasonable either. Because the thing is, Minnesota is probably the most improved team in the Northwest in terms of what they did in the offseason. Parise, Suter, those are high-end players. But on the other hand, the Wild were a miserable team last year, and people don't always necessarily appreciate how bad they were. From January 1st on, Minnesota only recorded 33 points. The next worst team in the West was Columbus, and they recorded 40 points. I mean, the last half of the season, the Minnesota Wild were the worst team in the league, and it wasn't even close. So I guess basically what I'm saying is, if you look at them, you really have to judge whether or not those changes, those people they brought in, are enough to change the status quo to pull them out of that place they were in last year.
Obviously, another addition. You know, not right now, but if you go back to last year's book, I believe Corey Pronman had Michael Granlund, their top prospect, as the number one prospect, NHL prospect in hockey. So Granlund is finally over in North America. He's been playing with their AHL club out in Houston. So I mean, that's another, you know, potential top six scorer they have there. So that's another factor that you can throw in there that Vakota maybe doesn't necessarily give enough credit to, although it's tough for a player to make a huge impact in their first season in the NHL.
Seems to me like... Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, John.
Oh, no, I was just going to agree and just state that, you know, Minnesota really does have a good core of young players. Granlund was mentioned, but you look at guys like Charlie Coyle, Zach Phillips, they've got a really quality prospect system. But at the same time, you know, those guys, it is, like you said, Timo, real difficult for those guys to have an impact this year. It might be something that we see over the next 2 or 3 years as Minnesota improves rather than an immediate impact this season.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and they have one of the better overall systems, so you would think that, you know, those guys, Parise and Suter, they're not going anywhere, that maybe if we're talking a legitimate threat down the road. But then again, I mean, we've talked a lot about this 48-game season and what it could mean, and I guess if one or two of those guys gets hot, Granlund has a great start, and all of a sudden Minnesota's at the top. So I guess I'm really interested in Minnesota. They could be a bit of a wild card for me. I wasn't trying to make a pun either.
Well, and you guys had Tom Awad on last time, and as he pointed out, you know, with the shortened season, like, there's luck and bounces and injuries always play a role in an NHL season, and over a shortened season, the role of chance is heightened. So it's really difficult to say, yeah, these guys are going to be awful, and you might end up looking bad if you do say that with any degree of certainty.
Now, John, let's step into your wheelhouse here as we move up the Vakota projections for the Northwest. The Edmonton Oilers, I mean, you cover this team really closely. I thought they made a little bit of a sneaky good deal getting Fistrick, you know, for a third-round pick the other day. And also, you know, when we're talking about these projections, you got a guy named Justin Schultz coming in who just ate up the AHL in his short time there. And also Nile Yakupov is coming in as a 19-year-old. Are you feeling positive about this team, John, or are you still thinking it's a couple years away?
Well, I don't know if they'll... I don't expect them to be in the playoffs this year, but I certainly expect them to be more competitive than they have been in years past. Justin Schultz in the American League, watching him this year, was outstanding. I know a lot of people aren't up on Yakupov right now because he didn't have the greatest World Juniors, but I was able to watch 10 or so games of his in the Continental Hockey League, and he was just outstanding there. Granted, it's a slower game than the NHL over in the KHL, but I think both those guys are going to have big impacts out. Like you, I like the Fistrick deal. They traded away a draft pick, and they added a steadying hand on the back end, but they kind of had to do that because they lost Andy Sutton for basically the whole season. I guess I'm cautiously optimistic, but I expect them to contend for a playoff spot, but I don't think they have enough to actually make the top eight in the West this season.
By the way, just as far as Vakota, we didn't mention on Minnesota there either. Vakota's got Minnesota and Edmonton pegged right at the same point level, 23rd in the NHL. 88 points over a full season or 52 points over the 48-game schedule. So, you know, there's not much separating second place from last place in the Northwest. So hey, I was going to ask you, actually, John, about Eberle. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Eberle. How good do you think he is? I mean, he's obviously not a number one draft pick. I mean, they got plenty of those. Do you think that he's, you know, among the best of their recent group of prospects, or do you think that some of that has come with some puck luck, with some high shooting percentages that won't last?
Well, the thing with Eberle, and it's difficult to criticize Eberle because he's such a beloved player in Edmonton. But he's not going to be a 19% shooter. We know that just barely short of certainty because nobody in the league is a 19% shooter on a consistent basis. Steven Stamkos, who I think most would agree is the best pure goal scorer in the league today, isn't a 19% shooter on a regular basis. So when you look at Eberle's season last year, I don't see any way around saying that, you know, things went his way. He had some good luck. But having said that, he's also an excellent player. He gets knocked a little bit unfairly, I think, because last year he spent the whole year welded at the hip to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And Nugent-Hopkins is a very talented guy, but he was an 18-year-old. And that I think really did hurt Eberle's some of his underlying numbers to a certain degree. As a rookie, Eberle's shot metrics, things like Corsi rating, were actually better, and I think that was because he was playing with Taylor Hall and Sean Horkoff in a depth role. Last year, he was playing with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Nugent-Hopkins took half the year to really get his scoring chance rates and shot rates up at even strength. So I guess what I'm saying in a long-winded sort of way is that Jordan Eberle's a good player. I like him a lot. He's not going to shoot the lights out the way he did last year consistently.
John, one more question on Edmonton. The goaltending situation. I mean, what's the deal here? I mean, you still have two below average goaltenders, and one of them is ridiculously below average. I mean, why has there been no solution?
Well, I think Devan Dubnyk has a decent shot at being a league average goaltender. Like, you look at the numbers he's put up over the last two seasons, he hasn't been great, but he's been right around the league average. And their resistance towards giving him more games has been mind-boggling, because Nikolai Habibulin is a miserable goaltender at the NHL level. He's been below average for years. He was below average when they signed him. And they've stuck with him through thick and thin, and it's been all thin. So I don't understand the reluctance to move beyond Habibulin. And honestly, this year, I'd rather see Jan Denis as the backup than Nikolai Habibulin. But there's nothing to be done about that. The only thing, we're getting indications that they're going to use Dubnyk a little more than they have in the past. It shouldn't be a true, you know, split where each guy gets 40 games. And if Dubnyk can play at a league average level, that'll be a big boost right there for the Oilers.
I just don't understand Habibulin being on an NHL team anymore. I mean, you know, you consider that he's 40, he's terrible, and he had off-ice problems. And what is it that ties him to this guy? I just have no idea. Go ahead.
In Habibulin's defense last year, he had a .960 save percentage through his first 10 games. He blew the doors off coming out of the gates, and then they started playing him way too often, and he imploded. So it's not like he's never had moments of brilliance. It's just his whole body of work is so substandard that it almost doesn't matter how brilliant he was over 10 games.
True. Timo, do you have a comment on that?
Nope. Sorry.
Okay. He stole your thunder. That's what we say in radio. He stole your thunder.
No, I mean, I think he's got a job because he won. He's a Stanley Cup winner. I mean, that kind of stuff. You know, teams can dwell on that kind of stuff way too long.
Yeah, and goaltending, because there's so much. Sorry, Matthew. There's so much shift year to year. We see even good goaltenders. There's a lot of fluctuation. So when you have a reputation as a starting goaltender, and particularly as a Stanley Cup winner, you get cut a lot of slack. And Habibulin's had a lot of slack.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, all right, moving up, though, in the division here, Calgary, maybe the most, I don't know, I don't want to call them the most dysfunctional general management in the league, because Columbus still exists, but, I mean, this team just puzzles the heck out of me. I mean, they paid Dennis Wiedemann like he's a top-tier defenseman, and it seems like, you know, they were still almost halfway decent. You know, they went out and got Yuri Hudler as well. They were still halfway decent last year, and maybe it's because they have some decent young talent. I really like what I saw out of TJ Brody when I saw him two or three times in the AHL this year. He was still on a entry-level contract, so I was able to see him in the American Hockey League. Really liked what I saw out of him, but John, I mean, this team just seems like it's kind of going nowhere long term, and they're certainly not built to win right now.
Yeah, they're sort of in the same situation Edmonton was a few years back, where they're in the hunt for the playoff spot every year, and they're trying desperately to hang on to that and to retool without rebuilding. And it's been a strategy that has been problematic for a lot of teams, and realistically, it would almost be merciful if they had the sort of implosion that the Oilers had in 2009, 2010, because the Oilers were that team for years, too, where they weren't all that good, but they kept trying and trying and trying to get good enough to get into the playoffs. And in Calgary's case, I think they're going to live and die with their goaltending. Mika Kiprusoff has good years, he has bad years. If he has a good year, they'll be in the hunt. And if he has a bad year, it might almost be a good thing, because this is a team that could fall down the standings in a hurry.
They've got some interesting, pieces coming in. They have that player from the KHL. Is it Cervenka?
Cervenka, yeah.
Right. Who's been a good player over there. So he's coming over as an older player, and I guess maybe getting a first line spot. So that's an interesting addition. I think also Berchi could have an impact as a rookie. So in addition to the overpays that Matt talked about, are those some players that could be helping them out?
Yeah, and also in addition to Cervenka, they also brought in Yuri Hudler, and he'll be helpful up front. I think they have some decent guys. That's the thing. It's not a terrible team. It's just not a very good team. It fits in the mushy middle, and it's very difficult to see them. A lot of things have to go right for them to really contend, and I think it's stretching probability to assume that they'll be in the hunt, even if some of these guys turn out the way they're hoping they do.
So if they're not in the hunt, and I think I've seen this kind of talk starting up now, is this finally the year that Jerome Iginla gets traded, maybe before the trading deadline?
I honestly don't know. You get the sense listening to management in Calgary that they really would like to see Iginla go spend his entire career with the Flames. And I can understand that for a lot of reasons. I think they could probably get a head start on a rebuilding effort if they did move Iginla, because this is a guy that has cachet around the league, and I think is probably the smartest thing to do, but so far they haven't shown a will to do it.
I mean, couldn't you pick out like four or five players on this roster that if things start to go wrong, that they would be helpful on other teams that are pushing for the playoffs? I mean, I'm thinking of like Corey Sarich for this, but it seems like there's a couple of guys. I mean, maybe even Alex Tanguay or Mike Camilleri, it seems like there's a couple of guys who are kind of on the other side, but if things were, if things went down in flames, if things went really badly for the Flames, that they could be one that that could jumpstart their rebuilding effort in a pretty good way, because I think they have some players who would be attractive to teams who are trying to make a playoff run.
Yeah, they've got a lot of they're a veteran club. They've got a lot of guys who've been around and will have value on deadline day. It's just a matter of them being willing to move them. And I think that's problematic this year, too, because we have a compressed schedule. Whenever the deadline hits, a lot of teams are going to be in the hunt. And if Calgary's, say, 5 points back at the deadline, are they going to be willing to have a fire sale? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And you really get the impression listening to them that unless things really starkly go downhill, they're not willing to sell these guys off. And just because of the shortness of the season, I don't know if they're going to be far enough out of contention for a playoff spot that they're going to be willing to trade these guys away.
And just kind of the nature of the Western Conference, too. You have your couple of good teams, and then you have so many that are all, parity is alive in the Western Conference. So, moving up the Northwest here, Colorado is projected here to be the second best team in the Northwest Division. And I think that if you said that to most hockey fans, that they would be a little bit taken aback by that. I think most people would think Minnesota would be up there. I know it's not a huge gap in the projection, but does that surprise you at all, John, to have Colorado behind Vancouver here?
No, And the reason I say that is because the Northwest Division really is Vancouver and the rest. I mean, you referenced parity. Nowhere is that truer than in the Northwest Division. Minnesota, well, just as a statistic, Calgary at even strength last year, 5-on-5 play, was minus 18 goal differential. Colorado was minus 19. Edmonton was minus 20. Minnesota was minus 38, but they've brought in Parise and Suter. So, I mean, you've got three teams separated by two goals in 5-on-5 play, and then Minnesota that made huge strides in the offseason. So I think you can make a case for any one of those four teams to be second to Vancouver in the division. Colorado, to me, they're a good team. They've got a lot of young talent, and they've got strength up the middle if they can get Ryan O'Reilly signed to a new contract. So it doesn't surprise me that they're there. Frankly, I have them finishing in second as long as they can bring in O'Reilly.
I've had this this essay in the book the last 2 years on core age, and it's just it's a weighted average age of the skaters on each team. And Colorado has gone young the last couple of years. And 3 years ago, I had them as the youngest team in the NHL. 2 years ago, they were the third youngest after Edmonton and the Islanders. And last year, they were the youngest again. So, I mean, it's a team that just based on the fact that how young they are, you figure that just that is going to work in their favor, is that you've got that many players, key players, that are younger than league average. So they're going to be improving.
Yeah, you look at their team last year. They had Milan Hayduk and Jan Heda, and I think those were the only two guys on the roster over the age of 30. It's a really young team, and they haven't done the full-scale rebuild the way a team like Edmonton has, but you've got guys like Landeskog, Duchesne, O'Reilly. The whole core of that team is so young that if they all step forward at the same time, it's the same thing with Edmonton. This is a team that could make a big stride in a hurry.
You know, the way I look at it is if Landeskog takes a step forward, he's in the category of superstar, right? I mean, because I was shocked at his ability to play on both ends of the ice last year. I mean, his numbers came out really, really strong. And it seems to me that if he takes one step up, he's right there with the best names. You know, he's right there with the Datsyuks and Kopitars.
Oh, he's a terrifying player. I can't think of a player who came in at that same age in recent memory and dominated in such a... Not offensively, because his offensive numbers were good, but not mind-blowing. But his two-way game, I can't remember such a young player having that complete a two-way game at that age.
And, you know, I like my goaltenders. Varlamov seems like a guy who, you know, we're talking about taking a step forward, but I like Varlamov a lot, John. What do you think of him?
Yeah, it's so hard to get a read on a guy like him that doesn't really have years and years behind him. But, you know, you look at his performance in the KHL this season, he had a .946 save percentage over 16 games. That's off the charts good. It's a short sample, but he's done it before, 2010-11 with the Capitals. He had a .924 save percentage. This is a guy who could be one of the best. Maybe he won't get there, maybe, because there's so many things, injuries, what have you, that could interfere. But he really is a guy with superstar potential.
Right, he's no Peter Budaj, but he's pretty good anyway. Just as far as Vakota, we've got Calgary and Colorado both coming in at 53 points on the shortened season. So, I mean, those four teams, all 52 or 53-point projections. So throw them in a hat, and you could have them come out basically in any order, except for number one, Matt.
Yes, except for number one, Timo. The Vancouver Canucks, John, they should run away with this division, and they should probably be the best, maybe the best team in the Western Conference, or at least competing for it. I don't know, you know, last year they made that trade at the end of the year to bring in Zach Cassian. He ends up being a healthy scratch by the time the playoffs are over. They have some bad luck in losing Daniel Sedin to an injury in the playoffs. Then, of course, they have the debacle in goal, starting Luongo and then bringing in Schneider later. It was almost like they were their worst enemy last year, but still should be one of the best teams in the league this year.
Yeah, although they definitely have concerns. And right now, they don't really have a second line. You know, David Booth's injured, and Ryan Kessler's coming off surgery. So right now they're looking at a guy like Jordan Schrader or Andrew Ebbett as their second line center.
Yikes.
And these are guys who are 40-point guys in the minors, not in the NHL, in the minors, and they're going to get a top six role in Vancouver out of the gate. So the potential for a slow start, and especially over a shortened season, might cost them the top spot in the West, though they should still crown the Northwest easily enough.
Did you like the addition of Jason Garrison on defense?
Yeah, I think there's a danger in overrating his offensive game because I don't think he's going to be able to consistently perform at the level he did last year in that particular category, but he's a strong two-way defenseman. I really like him. I think he's a big upgrade on Sammy Fowle.
Do you think that, I know that like history will tell us, but do you think they made a mistake in giving up on Cody Hodgson so early?
No, I don't. I think it was a bold move. I don't know if I would have had the courage to make it myself, because it is such a bold move. But the thing we forget is that Hodgson really didn't perform once he got dealt to Buffalo. He had 3 goals in 20 games after the deadline. He only had 8 points. He went -7. But we forget about that because he's kind of out of the spotlight, at least in the Vancouver market, when he's playing for Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And Cassian had similar numbers at the same age, at the same level. Hodgson coming up through the minors, I know he was a 10th overall pick, but his numbers in the AHL were disappointing. He had injury problems. And Vancouver, realistically, they have Henrik Sedin and Ryan Kessler down the middle. Unless they're moving one of those guys, there isn't room for Hodgson in a top six role. I think the move for Cassian was a bold one, but I think it addressed team need. I think it brought in a quality player, and I think it was a commendable move by the club long term.
Matt doesn't like Cassian.
No. Well, that's from a lot of experience in watching him in the minors and talking with him as well. There's some guys who are just set, you know, they're told that they're really great for a long time, and they really think that, and they think that they could play however they want to play. And I'm quoting a scout by saying this. You know, a scout said to me, he thinks he's a top six forward, and he really isn't. He's supposed to be a bruiser with his size and skill level, but, you know, he thinks that he should be a goal scorer, and, you know, he's kind of the guy that's a little thick-headed when it comes to people telling him what to do. So there's definitely some concerns on that end of the trade, too. You know what? With that trade, it might not end up working out for anyone. I will say this to Hodgson.
There's a reason why two teams traded problems. I mean,
right.
If one of them you know, pulls an inside straight and one of these guys turns out to be a star, well, they'll look smart. But chances are that both teams are going to have a vaguely useful but not great player.
Yeah, I mean, I guess mostly I'm reacting to the way it was portrayed in Vancouver at the time. There was a lot of criticism just because Cody Hodgson was in the middle of such a good season. But there's, like you guys say, you know, Cassian's not a perfect prospect in a lot of ways. Hodgson's not a perfect forward in a lot of ways. It really does fit the bill of two teams trading problems, even though, you know, both these guys are fairly coveted assets.
So how have we gotten so far in talking about Vancouver and not mentioning Luongo more than in passing?
Well, I think we're probably all skirting around the fact that nobody really expects him to be there all year.
So, I mean, who's he getting traded to? Toronto or Edmonton or who?
Well, you know, you hear the rumors, and of course the story is Luongo would like to go to Florida. I think personally we'll see him in Toronto. It just makes sense to me. He's got history with Nonis. The team obviously needs him. It's just a matter of getting a deal done, I would think.
Is there any chance he'd end up in Edmonton?
You know, Steve Tambellini got asked about it the other day, and of course he declined to answer, but there's been persistent rumblings that Edmonton's interested. I can't see Vancouver trading him within the division. You know, they've repeatedly stated that they think he's an elite goalie. I think there's a lot of justification for that. I just can't see them trading him within the division. I know I wouldn't be comfortable trading him within the division.
And how about the chance that he stays?
Yeah. And does he get bought out then instead of traded?
I can't see that. I mean, this is a guy that should have some value around the league. They ought to be able to get something for him. I can't see a compliance buyout with Luongo. And I mean, if he stays there, like if they can't get a deal done right away, and Corey Schneider completely implodes and Luongo takes the reins, maybe he stays. But I think the vast likelihood is that he ends up getting dealt early this year for, you know, a middling prospect and maybe a roster player.
I mean, since it's dragged out this long, I mean, in a way, would it be, I mean, other than the constant conversation, PR issues, whatever, wouldn't it in a way be smartest for Gillis to hold on to him now? I mean, we talked early on there about the compressed schedule. I mean, you've got two legitimate above-average goalies that could be sharing the load. Frankly, you could even have Luongo playing a little bit extra. Maybe, you know, if he plays well, he bumps up his value. You rest a younger guy, Schneider, up to the trade deadline. Then you've got some insurance. If one of the guys gets injured, well, I suppose the issue would be, I mean, if Luongo gets injured, then you can't trade him, or at least you can't trade him then. But you'd have some, I mean, if you're looking to win a Stanley Cup, you've got insurance up to the trade deadline that if Schneider gets hurt, you still have Luongo. And if they're both okay by the trade deadline, you've maximized your amount of wins maybe. You've kept a little bit of gas in Schneider's gas tank. And you trade Luongo off at that point. Maybe other teams are more interested in trading for, you know, less games, less salary for this year. I don't know. I could come up with that kind of an argument for why you'd want to hold on to him at least until deadline.
I think it's plausible, but I don't think it's likely, and I think that for two reasons. The first being that historically it's hard to move a big contract at the deadline. Just to make the dollars work and the needs for the rest of the season work, it's tough to do. I could see them hanging on to him and maybe moving him next summer if they can't get a deal done. So, but I do agree, you know, like having two good goaltenders is never a bad thing. And if Mike Gillis can't get a deal done, it wouldn't surprise me if he hung on to Luongo. With that said, they've got a lot of incentive to get a deal done. Vancouver's not, they're not as strong a team as they have been in years past. With the injuries, they're going to be under pressure right out of the gate. Their defense is, it's good, but it's not as good as it could be at the bottom end. We've seen them sign Cam Barker and Jim Vandermeer here. So they could use some help on the back end. And they're a cap team. Like if they want to improve something, if they want to address a hole, they need to move money. And having almost $9.5 million in cap hit and two goalies is a luxury that frankly I don't think they can afford given weaknesses elsewhere on the roster. I mean, it's fine if they want to romp through the Northwest Division during the regular season, but to make a run in the playoffs, they have some holes to fill, and I don't see how they can afford to fill them without moving out money, and to me that means Luongo.
John, how did we go this long without talking about Jim Vandermeer? Like, what? Come on. What were we thinking here? No.
We've got Vancouver at 99 points over a full season, which was tied for third, tied for the best in the Western Conference, and we've got them at 58 points over the shortened season.
So, John, if you had to pick one thing that was going to take down Vancouver, I mean, what would it be? If they're not at the top, I mean, clearly they'll be at the top of that division, but if they're not the top and they're not competing for a Stanley Cup, what is it that got them?
I'm going to say probably defensive depth. Because they've got a fairly good top four, but Alex Edler seems to have these recurring back problems. Hamhuis had injury last year. You know, like if Edler's back problems flare up and they have one other injury, they're awfully shallow. They don't necessarily have guys beyond Chris Tanev who can step up from the third pairing role and into a top four role. So, you know, they could be exposed there. They could be exposed up front too if injuries happen. I don't know if they have enough depth to go four rounds in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And the only thing that I wanted to add, last thing on Vancouver, was just that, you know, if you only have one or two partners that can possibly raise the bar for a trade, I mean, it seems like you're never going to get how much you think you should get if it's only Toronto and maybe Florida. And I see no incentive for Florida to trade for Roberto Luongo, other than he wants to go there. But Jacob Markstrom, to me, is a legitimate number one goaltender who's pretty much ready to go. And even if he, you know, even if Markstrom comes up or doesn't start right away, they have some other goalies who are capable at this time. And plus, Florida's not really a Stanley Cup competitor this year anyway. So I see no reason for them to trade for him. It's Toronto and only Toronto in my mind. So if there's only one team, how are you ever going to get exactly what you want if there's only one team that wants what you have? So anyway, John, before we let you go, Timo and I are going to carry on without you. Who's the most interesting team in the Western Conference to you? The team that maybe you don't know what's going to happen with them, that there's a lot of, I don't know, I mentioned wild cards earlier. I mean, what team are you most interested in watching in the Western Conference? Doesn't have to not be in the Northwest, but just in general, that you really want to keep an eye on.
Personally, and this is probably just because I find them fascinating for years now, is the Detroit Red Wings. You know, they've been a very well-run franchise. I'd say they've been the model of a well-run franchise the last decade. But their blue line is so thin. You know, we've been waiting for Detroit. Every year you hear it, this is the year Detroit falls. This is the year Detroit falls. This is, I hate to repeat it, this is the year where it really looks like they could. You know, the back end is weak. They didn't address it properly over the summer. They tried to bring in Suter. They weren't able to do it. They tried to bring in Sammy Salo. They weren't able to do it. They brought in Carlo Colaiacobo, and that's not enough. So, to me, the question is whether or not they're going to be, you know, like, it's not impossible for me to imagine a scenario where the Detroit Red Wings don't make the playoffs, which is crazy, given what happened in recent years. So, to me, they're the most interesting team. They're the team I want to watch and see what happens with.
I feel like in my whole lifetime I've never seen Detroit not make the playoffs. But all right, John, you got anything coming out here? What are you working on?
Honestly, these days I'm just scrambling to keep up with the news. There's been so much happening with Edmonton. Right now we're in the midst of these abbreviated training camps, and the news is coming fast and furious, and it's just a welcome change to be able to talk about actual hockey stuff after this lockout.
Oh, yeah, I 100% agree. Jonathan Willis, he's our hockey prospectus bro, and he's also writes for the Edmonton Journal and Grantland. So a very busy guy, for sure. So, John, hey, man, we really appreciate all your help tonight. Great job.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Thanks very much. That's Jonathan Willis. Timo and I will come back in just a minute and preview the rest of the West here on Hockey Perspectives Radio. Welcome back to Hockey Perspectives Radio. Matthew Collar along with Timo Seppa. Big thank you to Jonathan Willis for his contributions. Always good stuff from him. And, well, Timo and I are going to talk about the Central Division now, which is maybe the best division in, I don't know, sports, or at very least hockey last year. Four teams over 100 points and four teams making the playoffs. And I think that a couple of the teams in this division might drift back from kind of where they were. And, you know, we talked with John. He said that Detroit was the most interesting team to him. So we'll start from bottom to top here on the projections and just jump into it. And Timo, the worst team in the NHL, in the best division in the NHL, Columbus. Last year, they were awful. They got off to an unbelievably bad start, and they finished it off still mostly pretty bad. One of the worst, if not the worst. Now, the worst goal differential in the entire league. I mean, how can a team in this era be that bad as they were last year?
I mean, the biggest answer is that's been plaguing them the last couple of years, insult upon injury, and whatever else you want to call it, is horrible goaltending, and that starts with Steve Mason. I mean, people thought he was going to be a great NHL goalie based on his rookie season when he was still a teenager, but it hasn't turned out at all that way. And I think people that are still looking for him, holding out hope that he could turn into an average NHL netminder, you know, I don't see it. I don't even know how long he's going to be in the NHL. So, you know, Columbus kind of, they keep drafting goalies. They keep trading for goalies. It seems like they must have 8 on the roster now. So they brought in Sergei Bobrovsky, right? So to me, he stands a much better chance of getting the majority of the starts than Mason. I mean, you hear rumors about maybe they're, who knows, maybe they'll be in on Luongo. I mean, seriously, I mean, how many goalies can you carry?
Yeah, and Bobrovsky, I still, I don't know. I mean, I never thought that he was a really good goaltender in Philadelphia. He might get the starts, but I feel like best he'll give you
every goaltender. And they rode him really hard. He started off hot, and was just, you know, first year in the NHL, and you're playing him pretty much every game. I don't think he really got a chance to show if he was, you know, you just can't do that with somebody the first year in the NHL when they're 22. So, I mean, it was that was the wrong approach with him. And I think, you know, time will tell on him. I've made my I have my opinion on Mason already, but we'll see on Bobrovsky.
Now, hold on. You're saying the Philadelphia Flyers would misuse a goaltender.
The Philadelphia Flyers would, you know, basically anything wrong with a goaltender.
Yeah, run a million of them into the ground, too. So maybe this is perfect. And, of course, the big offseason deal, they get rid of Rick Nash. They get some prospects back. They also now have Brandon Dubinsky. They have Artem Anisimov, who you know that I like quite a bit. And they also kind of pulled a little sneaky deal and got Nick Foligno, who's a player that I like. I mean, should this team, I mean, we still haven't projected as the worst team in the division, but should they be quite a bit better, a little bit better? What do you think?
You know, I think they've, you know, they turned those deals down around and got some decent pieces. I mean, if they're not the worst team in the NHL, they're in the conversation. If they run out better goaltending, I mean, that's a improvement right there. But I'd look for them to be down at the bottom of the NHL one way or another.
Sit back and wait for the draft picks, and then just hope. The next one of the next teams on our list did that, but we'll get to them in a bit. The projections have Nashville next, and I would imagine that all 4 Nashville fans would be pretty upset about this. I mean, like now.
Well, I mean, we basically have Detroit and Nashville tied, but
Still, we have them in fourth place after they had a 104 point season last year and were great. And of course, they did lose Ryan Suter. But, I mean, it almost looks to me like we're calling for a big drop-off here. And why do you think that is?
I mean, Rob Volman goes into it in a lot of detail in the book. And I think he's dead on saying that, you know, not only is it a team who did not do well in possession numbers, but, I mean, basically you have nearly all of their players that either had a career year or they had the second best year of their career. I mean, Rob lists all these players like Martin Erat, Ryan Suter, Colin Wilson, Jordan Tutu, Nick Spaulding, Kevin Klein. All of them had career years. The guys that had their second best year ever, David Legwand, Mike Fisher, Shea Weber, Sergei Kostitsyn, third best year, Patrick Hornquist. So, I mean, they had everything kind of come together. I mean, unless they have some magic formula that we haven't figured out and, you know, that pulled everybody up at the same time, I mean, that just looks ripe for regression where, you know, it's very rarely that everybody has a career year at the same time. So, you know, you couple that along with the fact that Ryan Suter is gone, and I think most people, I guess, would say that Shea Weber is the better player. but you know, it's not like that's universal that some people don't think that Suter was the bigger piece there, and we'll see how they age too. So I think that there's reasons to think why Nashville could take a step back.
Well, and they're not a particularly young team either. It's not like they're running out a lot of 19, 20, 21-year-olds. I mean, they got some older players, you know, Martin Erat and Mike Fisher, and they paid Paul Gostad a lot of money, which I didn't understand. And like you mentioned, David Legwand. And I mean, these aren't, you know, top prospect young guys that are going to see a lot of ice time here. So it's not like we don't know what we're getting. But, you know, we have to talk about with Nashville, Pecorine. I mean, he is put his name in the conversation for elite goaltenders in the league. I know that you've never been the biggest Pecorine guy, but, I mean, he's had a couple of solid seasons in a row now, two really solid years in a row. I mean, do you think that he is in that conversation? Do you think that he belongs, you know, do you think that he's a guy who can continue to repeat it? What do you think of Rene here? Because it seems to me that a lot hinges on him.
Well, yeah, sure, and he's a good goalie. I mean, I don't know if you had a choice to keep two out of the three of out of their big three with Weber, Suter, and Rene at big money. I mean, I'm not sure that you would have. You should have picked the goalie as one of those. I mean, you probably would have been better off picking the two defensemen. But yeah, I mean, I don't have an issue with Rene. I mean, he's a good goalie. I wouldn't be paying any goalie $7 million a year. So I don't think that that's a good contract. But, you know, he's an above average goalie, definitely.
It seems to me like he would be primed to slip back a little bit, though. You know, losing Suter alone, to me, would hurt.
Sure. I mean, obviously it all works together if you're looking at the team stats, goals against average, wins, and so on. Maybe that takes a step back. I don't know if the save percentage does.
Now, moving up the list here, Detroit is a pretty fascinating case, too. I mean, because every year it seems that they're almost like, you know, the New England Patriots of hockey, where every year somebody's saying, well, this is the year that the Red Wings really fall off. No, this is the year that the Red Wings really fall off. And it never seems to happen. I mean, they've drifted back from where they were a couple of years ago when they won the Cup and then went to the Cup. But still, this is a really strong team to me, and it seems like losing Lindstrom is going to hurt, but they should still be in the playoffs. That's kind of where I got them. And third in the division makes sense, but I still see this team as a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think they could be a playoff team. You do think that Nick Lindstrom is a good player, though, right?
Yes, I do.
Because, I mean, next to Orr and you know, Bork, who was very good, and a compiler on top of that. I mean, is Lidstrom, you know, much worse than the third best defenseman of all time? I mean, I understand that he was getting up there in years, but, you know, they took a fairly big hit last offseason when Brian Rafalski retired. I mean, he was definitely their second best defenseman, and now they lose, you know, one of the couple best defensemen of all time. You know, those seem like fairly big hits to me. And on top of that, I mean, Detroit is perennially one of the oldest teams. Now, ironically, obviously, you know, Rafalski and Lidstrom leave, so, I mean, that's going to make them a little bit younger, but but still, I mean, players like Zetterberg and Franzen and Datsyuk, I mean, obviously they're not young guys anymore, so even the guys that remain, you know, you'd figure that they're at least slowly trending downward. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly would see why they might be a lower seed in the West. You know, that would make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I get your point about Lidstrom. I mean, you said it, but I don't think you're losing the best defenseman of all time in his prime. I think last year he was very good still, at what was he, 42 or something? He was very, very good, but he was, I mean, you're not talking about one of the top two or three even in the game last year, I don't think. So it's not exactly like a Ryan Suter-like loss. I think that it does leave a hole. They got a couple of young players coming up. I saw some of Brandon Smith, really liked what I saw out of him in the AHL. So not saying that Brandon Smith just fills in for Nick Lidstrom. It's not what I'm saying. But I still think that this team could pop a few guys in, same coach, same system, and still have a lot of success. But, you know, I agree with John Willis to where...
Don't bet against the Red Wings, because obviously they've been... they've had their magic for 15, 20 years, whatever it's been. You know, they're obviously run really well, coaching and management. So, yeah, don't bet against them.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, it is still the Detroit Red Wings. So, but I agree with what John said. I mean, it might be the most interesting case because I think that we all just expect Detroit to continue to be great, and it would be really something if they did fall off the side of a cliff. So, moving forward here in the division, from bottom to top is the way we're going here in the projections. St. Louis projected as the second best team. And St. Louis had just a ridiculously wild, weird season. They fire their coach, Davis Payne, early in the year. And then they end up winning the division and going 36-5 at home and having the craziest goaltending performance out of Brian Elliott. And just, I mean, that goes under the category of you never would have seen that coming ever, even if you knew Ken Hitchcock was getting hired. You never would have seen Brian Elliott coming in and posting a near 940 save percentage. So a weird year, but, you know, Timo, I love the way
Elliott was putting up those numbers even before Hitchcock came on.
Yeah, so that was just, I mean, it was just weird, right? I mean, just one of those.
Here's a guy who went from an 893 save percentage in 2010-11, a minus 20.6 GVT, worst in the NHL among all players, and he went up to a 940 save percentage, which is insane and Hasek-like. And, you know, obviously if he wasn't, you know, sharing the workload with Halak and you gave him, you know, 20 more starts, I'm going to say that save percentage comes down somewhat. But still, I mean, you're talking about a 27.9 GVT. I forget exactly where that was, but I mean, it was something like sixth in the NHL among all players. It was something insanely high, especially for a goaltender who wasn't getting the majority of the starts. So, I mean, it's almost like a worst to first kind of situation, and he will kind of forever be the poster boy, I think, of how variable goaltending performance is.
Yeah. I mean, when people say it doesn't matter who your goaltender is, I guess they would point to him as an example. When I look at this roster, though, I think that the goaltending is a product of this roster being built. And I know you said that his save percentage was high, but, I mean, the system that Ken Hitchcock brought in just fits this roster so well. They have so many players that have size, that are great two-way players, that just fit perfectly for locking other teams down and not giving up any chances and getting shutouts. And I'm thinking, you know, I've always liked Barrett Jackman a ton. Alex Pietrangelo, I thought, had a, I don't know if you want to call it a breakout season. The guy's only 20-something years old, you know, early 20s. But, I mean, like, to where people recognize how good he was last year.
Not enough to get him on the Norris ballot again. I mean, I think he came in, I think the last 2 years he's been in the top four, if not the top three, in defenseman GVT, and he hasn't made the Norris ballot yet. But,
yeah, I thought that he should have probably made it his rookie year. I mean, I thought he was so good. But last year, I think, well, at least some people started to take notice of how good he really is. And he could be a superstar, I think. And then the forwards up front, David Backes is just ridiculously good at locking down and can score too. TJ Oshie, you know. I love the way this team is constructed, and I wouldn't be surprised, you know, I mean, they should be in the playoffs again, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're competing for the cup. I love the way they play. I love the way they're constructed, and I love that They have a coach who a lot of people don't like, and I guess I understand why, but they have this coach who has his system, and it fits the roster really well. And I guess from covering Buffalo all the time and seeing the last few years where a coach's system doesn't even come close to fitting the roster he has, I don't know. Maybe it refreshes me, Timo.
Yeah, I mean, I think St. Louis and Buffalo, I mean, that's an interesting comparison because, you know, they're two teams that are kind of, they're kind of trying to do it with a bunch of pretty good players, but I mean, you don't have really a superstar on either team. So, I mean, I kind of like that in that comparison, and that maybe St. Louis is like Buffalo, except done better.
I think that if Buffalo had a different coach last year, they probably are at the top of their division. I know they had a lot of injuries, but
I don't think it's just the coach. I mean, I think that it's, you know, starts with, you know, management, drafting. I mean, you're talking about liking those players like Oshie Backus. I mean, you didn't mention
Steen
and players like that. I mean, a lot of those players are, you know, that's drafts that have brought all that talent in, and they, St. Louis for years was you know, towards the top of the NHL in having the best farm system. So I mean, this is the fruits of that. I mean, I guess the question is, you know, will they continue, will that pipeline continue to bring in good enough players to keep this run going? And I'm not so sure about that.
You don't think so?
Well, I mean, my Clarkson College acquaintance there, Jarmo Kekäläinen, was in charge of their drafts through 2011, and one of his last picks was Vladimir Tarasenko, who's going to be on the roster. And I've heard a lot of people who are not at all as high on what they did last year in the draft. So, you know, that's a question for is St. Louis going to be able to draft as well going forward?
Well, I think the Sabres have drafted better lately too, if we're, you know, making that comparison. So maybe they've decided to put a focus back on it, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, no, I think that they could be a very solid team at least this year and possibly compete for the Cup. So, Chicago is the top projected team, and that makes a lot of sense to me. I thought going into last year's Stanley Cup playoffs that Chicago had a great chance to kind of come from being a mediocre to good team in the regular season, you know, with an underperforming Patrick Kane and some injuries and some terrible goaltending, and then, you know, just kind of blow it up in the playoffs and make a run. And it didn't happen. They lost Marian Hossa to a ridiculously dirty hit, and it kind of fell apart from there. I know they were already down in the series, but it really fell apart. And
maybe that was karma for concussing Daniel Sedin. I mean, maybe that's not the right thing for me to say, but you know, Duncan Keith certainly had his hand in knocking Vancouver out of the playoffs.
You are definitely right about that. He definitely did. No, I'm not saying they should cry about anything, because, you know, a few years back when they were losing to Detroit in a series, I mean, they just went all out as dirty as they could be. So it's not, I'm not trying to stand up for Detroit here. I'm just saying, Chicago. I'm just saying that maybe if Hossa stays in that series, and you remember, what was it, every game went to overtime, or every game was one goal. It was an unbelievably good series. But this year, they're number one, at least in the division here, in the Central. So why do you think that is?
They're not only number one in the division, they're tied with Vancouver for our top pick in the West. So they've got a lot of star power. I mean, Stan Bowman had to trade off a bunch of their quality depth after the Stanley Cup. I mean, the people that want to give Dale Talon credit for picking Patrick Kane first when anybody would have in that draft, and some of their other moves, I mean, a lot of those were no-brainers. And then, but the other thing that he did was, you know, lock up a ton of players to inadvisable contracts. Something that you could say that he might have continued down Florida. You know, Stan Bowman had to get rid of a lot of that salary and a lot of that cap. So the depth went, you know, they had to get rid of some of their depth. So the question now is, you know, can they bring in the next wave of great depth? But what Bowman did well was he kept all the right pieces. You know, he you know, signed Keith and Seabrook and you know, all the players that really made a difference, and he had to let go of Ladd and Versteeg and players like that. So Chicago needs that next wave of great depth, but Bowman did a great job of keeping the key players that he should have.
I could also see with this team that last year they had a problem throughout the regular season, especially with depth on the defensive side. And yep. I mean, it was brutal outside of Seabrook and Duncan Keith. I mean, there was nobody to go to. I mean, you had Jarmelson, and that was pretty much it.
And people were high on him when he was an RFA. I never got that. I mean, he's an okay player, but he's not a world beater.
Jarmelson, you mean?
Yeah, and you know, Nick Leddy is kind of okay, and but yeah, they definitely need more lines. They used to be so deep first from the first line through the fourth line, and yeah, I remember watching them against the Islanders last year. I'm like, when the top lines are on the ice, you're just like, oh my god, these guys are so good. You know, I had a couple of those moments during the season. You know, when you saw Boston's top lines out there and they're clicking and they're blowing the Islanders out or whatever, but then the bottom of the roster was just not very good. And so, I mean, that's really the question is, can they fill that up with better players?
Yeah, I mean, they did make two, I don't know, little sneaky moves to fill out the defense at least. Johnny Oduya at the trade deadline. Yeah. And I like the Michael Roosevelt move.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good pick. I mean, Roosevelt was never one of my favorites when he played for the Rangers. But, I mean, I understand that he's you know, good number 4 or 5 defenseman, something in that ballpark at this point in his career.
And I don't know, they still have Ray Emery, and I want to kind of cheer for Ray Emery a little bit. You know, just I loved following him. What was it, maybe 2 years ago when he was with Anaheim, and he just kind of by default ended up with a starting gig going into the playoffs. It was kind of fun to watch, and so like he's got the comeback story, and I kind of like that. But I look at the goaltending here, and Corey Crawford faltered so badly last year. And then it was like, okay, every night we're running Ray Emery out there and, you know, getting lit up by Jordan Eberle for 8 goals or something. You know, I mean, it was just brutal. And I think that if they get average goaltending, I mean, this team should be right up at the top with Vancouver. But I still have my questions about Corey Crawford, and I don't think you can just throw Ray Emery in there every night if Crawford loses it.
Sure.
Okay, so that's the Central. Let me give you the order again. Columbus, Nashville, Detroit, St. Louis, Chicago. That's from bottom to top.
Yeah, and we didn't throw in the points this time around. We've got Columbus coming in at 47 points on the shortened season. Nashville and Detroit both at 54, St. Louis at 56, and Chicago at 58. And keeping in mind that Pittsburgh is our highest ranked team, and they're at 61. So Chicago and Vancouver we have tied for the third at 58.
So there you go, Central Division. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll run through the Pacific when we come back here on Hockey Perspectives Radio. Back here on Hockey Perspectives Radio, Matthew Collar along with Timo Seppä. And, well, Timo, we're down to one division left to go before we've previewed every team in the NHL. And then we can start our NHL season, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about. Although still, a couple of days after we were commenting the other day on the Eastern Conference that, you know, nothing has really happened yet, and still nothing has happened yet, so we're waiting. But anyway, I want a big trade, basically, but I guess it's just not going to happen. So, all right, Pacific Division, our last division to do here. and, you know, just like we did before, from bottom to top. And we start out with one that I think should be a surprise. We talked about it with Tom Awad the other day, but Phoenix is at the bottom of this division after being at the top of the division last year and going all the way to the Western Conference Finals. They got unbelievable goaltending last year, and, you know, almost in St. Louis-like fashion, but not as good. A lot of good players, but no real big-time stars. You know, Timo, I want to say that Phoenix won't have this big of a drop-off to go from first to worst, but I see why it makes sense statistically.
Yeah, I know. What I have to say is, I mean, Vokoda's been cool on Phoenix for several years, so, I mean, if there's a team here that you can say, okay, Vokoda has a blind spot to them, maybe it's Phoenix. I mean, I still could very much see them being on the outside of the playoff picture, but you know, if you want to be optimistic about Phoenix, you say, okay, a combination of Dave Tippett's team system and Sean Burke's goaltending, coaching, made the light bulb go on in Mike Smith's head. No, he won't have as insane of a year as last year, but maybe he's progressed to the point where he's an above average NHL goalie. I mean, that's possible. And, just whatever the rest of the Tippett magic is, you know, maybe they'll keep overperforming and get into the playoffs. But I mean, you can certainly understand why Vokoda would brush off one hot year from Mike Smith that he hasn't had before, and consider that Phoenix might take a step back. I mean, they're also predominantly, a lot of their key players are older as well. So, I mean, those are some reasons I can think of why you look for them to have a step back. By my core age calculation, they're actually, last year, were the second oldest team to Detroit.
Yeah, you know, I go back and forth about this team, because it makes so much sense to me that they would lose Whitney, and, you know, he had such a amazing year considering his age, and I thought, you know, I just can't believe they got that much out of him at his age.
And even if he was on the team, I mean, you have to expect him to take a big step back anyway.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, is that, like, we talked with Nashville about guys who just had crazy great performances and it all kind of came together. I mean, no one would have ever predicted that you would have gotten that out of Mike Smith. And then, you know, Whitney comes out with just an all-star season. And, yeah, at his age, I think he's going to be either 39 or 40 this year. I mean, I know he's not on the team anymore, but you would have expected, even with that. But then losing that point-per-game player, I mean, I believe that, you know, a coach and his system has to fit his players. And I think that Dave Tippett's done a great job with that. You know, he's got a lot of players that are kind of mediocre stars or good or just strong players, and he's found a way to work with them. But, I mean, when you lose a great player like that and you rely on such overperforming goaltending, I mean, it just screams you're going to drift back. So, I can see it. Anyway, moving up the list here.
I mean, on the plus side, obviously, I mean, people are high on Oliver Ekman-Larsson for good reason. That's a young defenseman who's just going to keep progressing to be one of the league's best. So, I mean, that's one case where they've got a youngster who should definitely be on the upswing.
Yeah, I really liked what I saw of him last year. And that's the thing, is that they have a strong, like a solid, we talked about how Chicago had no depth on their defense, and Phoenix has depth on their defense, so you figure Tippett creates this, like, system to keep good shots away from Mike Smith or limit the amount of shots that he faces. He knows he's got some strong defensemen in Yandle and Ekman-Larsson, and, you know, he just puts it together, and maybe they could get more out of it than their talent and just GVT says. So, we'll see. Moving up the list here, Anaheim. You know, it seems like Anaheim, we talk about teams that don't have any depth. Anaheim is beyond the poster boy for not having any depth. They have one line, and that's it. And the line is really good, or, you know, just those top couple of players are really, really, like, Hall of Fame good. And Timu is back, Timo, which is great. But past that, past Getzlaf, past Perry, past Solani, but they have nobody. And on the defensive side, I mean, they have one or two good defensemen, and then nothing. And I don't know what the deal with Jonas Hiller is, what you're going to get out of him. So, I mean, I almost think if I was going to guess, I know that our projection has the same number of points between Phoenix and Anaheim. I would guess Anaheim ends up at the very bottom.
Yeah, I would say that that's definitely a better guess there. I think you're overselling it a little bit. I mean, Anaheim, okay, has had most of two lines. You didn't mention Bobby Ryan, and you didn't mention Saku Koivu. And so, I mean, they've, for years now, they've basically had five star to almost star forwards. But, yeah, I mean, their depth has been horrible. I mean, and basically the solution to whenever they're looking to bring in some new players to try to improve their depth is they look for old players from the Oilers. They try to pick up more players that aren't on the Oilers anymore, the worst team in the NHL. So it's just been kind of like a bizarre strategy there. But, Vyznovsky moves on from the defense to the Islanders now. They've got a few potentially decent youngsters out there like Cam Fowler, but and at forward, some people think that Devontae Smith-Pelly could turn into something. But this is a team that should have been torn down several years ago and rebuilt, and they've just been trying to just milk the last couple stars they have. And I would once again say, tear it down. I mean, you're getting to the end of the contracts with Getzlaf and Perry. So those could turn out to be new Rick Nash or Roberto Luongo situations for Anaheim if they start falling out of the picture. So if they're playing fairly well, the team would do well to try to trade them for picks and prospects. And personally speaking, from my heart, I mean, I love Teemu Selanne. I wish he was in the Eastern Conference so I could see him this year. But I mean, he's going to retire one of these years, and I would love.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
I would love for him to leave the Ducks and actually get to a team that has a chance to do something in the playoffs. I mean, go to St. Louis, go to Pittsburgh, go to Philly, go to the Rangers, go to someplace that actually has a chance to go deep into the playoffs. I mean, if you're going to ride off into the sunset, I understand that your family is in California, but go live somewhere else for 2 or 3 months and see if you can win another Stanley Cup. It's not going to happen in Anaheim. There's just no chance it'll happen in Anaheim.
He will never, ever retire, and I'm going to go on believing that until he actually does. And I totally agree. Gosh, Timo Solani is awesome. You know what? They could have one of the greatest fire sales of all time. I mean,
there's some high-end pieces there. I mean, there is a whole bunch of junk. There's a couple high-end pieces that you could they should have done it for more value a couple years ago. They can still get plenty of value. I mean, this pieces, big pieces for a rebuild. Not just a retool.
I couldn't even believe that they didn't move, Bobby Ryan last year with so much conversation about it. And I know that, you know, from what I've heard around here, the Sabres were trying to put together some offers for him.
I'm sure a lot. I mean, half the teams in the NHL, I'm sure, when you hear that he's potentially could be moved, I'm sure everybody wants to pick him up. But obviously the price was too high.
Well, see, that's the crazy thing. I mean, you have almost the whole league wanting your guy. I mean, nobody put together a good enough offer. I mean, this isn't a Luongo situation where literally one team wants him. Anyway, let's keep moving up here, though. You know what? You know what I'm starting to find, Timo? The teams that aren't good are more fascinating to me than the teams that are really good, because it's like, what should they do here in the future, or what can really go wrong for them? And then we get to the Kings, and we're like, well, or we get to Chicago, well, they're real good. Patrick Kane's great, Taves is great, House is great, everybody's great, you know. But with these other teams, you know, that aren't supposed to be very good, it's kind of like, well, what could go right to maybe have them surprise us, or what could go really wrong, or should they sell? It's more interesting. Anyway, here, you know, when we asked Jonathan Willis what his most interesting team was, he said Detroit. I'm going to say in the Western Conference, it's Dallas. I really, really like some of the things that Dallas did in the offseason. I love the pickup of Jaromir Jagr. I like the trade for Derrick Roy. I like the signing for Ray Whitney. And I think you added some really good pieces there to a team that was right on the end. And maybe the more one of the more underrated moves is getting Cody Eakin. Am I saying his name right? You know, Eakin, E-A-K-I-N? Yeah,
I think so, but I don't know enough about him to comment on that one. But, I mean, I agree with you. I scratched my head about some of the – at first thinking about the moves for – I mean – again, they're a team that's been a bubble team for several years. They've just kind of fallen off towards the end and never quite made it to the finish line. Obviously, the Western Conference is very tough, and being a few points out of a playoff spot still means that you're a pretty good team. So, I mean, if you're a team, again, that kind of needs to, at least to some degree, retool, you know, what are you doing picking up Jagr and Whitney? On the other hand, I mean, even though Whitney's a two-year deal, I mean, they're relatively short-term deals. So if underneath it all, if you're doing the right things in your system and bringing in and retaining enough of, you know, younger pieces, I don't mind that you bring in Jagr or Whitney for a year or two. I mean, they're obviously still very good players, so... you know, give your fans some good aging stars to cheer for. You know, have them help you maybe get into an eighth seed or something like that. I don't have an issue with that. I mean, it's not like you're signing Ilya Bryzgalov for
right.
10 years or whatever. You're not destroying your franchise with those moves. So I don't have an issue with that at all. And I think you're right. I mean, Derrick Roy, I think that's one case where they definitely got the better of Buffalo in that trade. I mean, one of the big moves that obviously worked against them a couple years ago was giving up on James Neal. I mean, that was foolish, and I think that will set them back. But they've been gaining some ground after that.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right with James Neal. I mean, you give up somebody who can, you know, score. Well, he scored 40 goals this year, but, I mean, he wasn't probably going to score 40 goals in Dallas, but he was a 30-goal scorer, and you just move him out. So I like that Roy replaces some of that scoring touch, although I will say they have to get this Jamie Benn thing figured out. I mean,
you lose Neal, you don't want to lose another one of your young chips. I mean, you're talking about players that are somewhat analogous to what we were just talking about with Anaheim. I mean, they've got their three young players with Bobby Ryan and Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry. I mean, so much of their value in their franchise is in those players. I mean, it was the same thing in Dallas, I mean, to varying degrees with players like Louis Erickson and Ben and Neal. They already blew one with Neal. You don't want to lose Ben as well.
Yeah, and... you know, I'm looking at the offensive side. Is this team could score a lot of goals and be fun to watch too? I mean, just from just from liking hockey from that standpoint, and they could be fun. But I do wonder about the blue line a little bit. I mean, Stefan Robida is a little bit old, a little bit long in the tooth these days. You know, not quite what he was. And I wonder about how good that blue line's going to be. But I think the goaltending is solid. I mean, I've kind of admired Kari Lehtinen you know, the last couple of years. And when I wrote the top 10 goaltenders piece, I mean, he was in it. He was, you know, I had him projected as one of the top 10 goalies in the league. So I like where they are with Lightning. I mean, I could see this team being a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked again to have them make one of the last playoff spots or two. I mean, I don't know that I would pick them for eighth, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised to see them in eighth.
So moving up the list here, San Jose and L.A. Now we have them tied. Am I right? You have the list.
Yeah, we have tied for fifth. I mean, L.A., Rangers, Philadelphia, and San Jose. We've got them all at 57 points. Actually, to recap, I should say that we got Dallas at 53, and we've got Anaheim and Phoenix at 50.
So we'll start with San Jose out of the two. And, Timo, I mean, when is San Jose not thought to be like the team? I mean, you know, it's always like, you know, like is it, that's the reputation. It's always, well, San Jose, they have the talent. Here we go again. And, you know, they win a playoff series or two, and it's things are different, and then they lose, and it's not. And, you know, it's a never-ending narrative with this team. Is this the year that they finally do it, or what? I mean, I guess I'm just tired of the, like, well, San Jose's great, and going into the playoffs, it's always some analyst is picking San Jose because this is their year, and it never seems to happen. I like a lot of their parts. I love the roster. It's very strong, and it should be right at the top. I don't know. I'm already penciling them in.
But they're aging. I mean, that's a team where we've been talking about, you know, when will their window close? And you figure that that's going to happen at some point fairly soon. Sure, the other a year ago in the off season they picked up Brent Burns is another good player on their defense. But you know, overall, it's just the same players that they've had there, whether it's Dan Boyle or Joe Thornton, and they keep getting a year older. You know, other than Logan Couture, I mean, who do they have who's one of their star players who's younger? It's a team that really does need to win now, or they need to figure out how to retool.
Yeah, totally right. I mean, if you're just talking about the star power that they have, I mean, they have a lot of it. Especially, I love their blue line. I mean, I love their defense. Dan Boyle's got to be, still at age 36, one of the best in the league. And you mentioned Burns. I think he's one of the more underrated players. But, yeah, you're right. You just go through the roster, and every one of these players is near 30 years old or getting older than that. So you wonder how many more years they have left. And I just, until they do it, I don't know. Can I really believe that this team, when it gets to the playoffs, is going to be able to pull it off and make a deep run and get to the Cup Finals? I don't know. I mean, I know we talk about how so much is luck when it comes to the playoffs, but how many years in a row can a team just have bad luck in the playoffs and not finally get over the hump? Because there have been plenty of years where they've had the most talent in the league and a couple where they've even had the best record in the league in the regular season.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, it's certainly hard not to think that way. I don't know if that's really the cold analytical way we should think, but I mean, yes, we've been conditioned to think that way about San Jose, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You're right about that. The analytical way is probably, well, it's all about, you know, how much talent they have total, but you know, at some point, I don't know. You got to prove it to me eventually. So, the Cup champs. I like that we have come to the Cup champs as being the very last team that we'll do here to preview. And we've gone through the entire NHL, and we've come to the Los Angeles Kings. Not by design, totally by accident.
pretty much by accident, yes.
Yes.
And the fact that the Pacific Division always gets treated last by every preview or every discussion out there.
You know, I remember us talking at the very beginning of the playoffs, and I said, I would love to see Jonathan Quick go on a run. because I've liked him, and I like that he plays a little bit different. He's not a box goalie that just, you know, comes from a goaltending video since he was 3 years old. He plays a little bit different of a style, and just kind of admired him from afar out in L.A. for a long time and hoped he'd make a run. And it was great to see him step up. We have him as the number one goalie projected this year. And, you know, I think that this team is so well balanced. It's, you know, I think that that plays a big role in where his numbers end up playing out, is just how solid they are and how many good two-way players they have. But to me, it starts with him, though. I think it starts in goal with Jonathan Quick. I think he became a legit superstar with winning the Cup, and I kind of can't wait to see what he does to follow it up.
Right. I mean, not only was he a deserving Conn Smythe winner in the playoffs, not to say that they didn't have several good performances, but, I mean, a team that had awful shooting percentages throughout most of the year, I mean, Quick is the reason why they were just anywhere near the discussion of a playoff berth. I mean, he had a .929 save percentage over 69 games, I think it was. And, I mean, how many games are out there where he won 1-0, 2-1? He was a big part of the reason for them just even getting to the eighth seed last year. And I guess the question is, even though we project Quick as our top goaltender, I mean, the fact is, goalies, you always expect them to regress if they had a well above average season. So, you know, if Quick is getting is going to take at least some kind of a step back from his fantastic season last year, what exactly is getting better on LA? What do you think?
Well,
I suppose the horrible shooting luck from the first part of the season can't persist, but
well, what's getting better on LA is a full season with Jeff Carter, and that seemed to work in the playoffs and down the stretch there with him in the lineup. And also, Mike Richards had a really bad year last year, and I just can't see him having another. I mean, he just was terrible last year. Not his play, but I mean his, you know, when you're talking about the low shooting percentages, he was like the poster boy for just no luck all season long. Didn't quite fit in on that team until the very end of the year. I remember him getting put with who was it? Dwight King one day on a line, and Jordan Nolan, just to change things up because it was going so badly for him. I just can't see that happening again. A full season with Carter. You know, I think that some things could improve there.
Yeah, Richards is, I mean, he's a weird player. I mean, he certainly had a even though he was a captain, he had a reputation in Philadelphia. So, not quite sure what to think and what to say about him. But, I mean, the Kings are a team with a ton of talent on it. I mean, you mentioned that the Kings played better after Jeff Carter came over. I mean, obviously, give a lot of credit to Daryl Sutter. I mean, he might have done a pretty bad job being GM of Calgary, but he coached the hell out of the Kings, and he obviously was a big reason for their turnaround. So I do think that that LA is deserving of being in our top five, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll have a better regular season. I don't know if they'll win the Cup again, but I think that they should be right up there with the favorites. And, you know, I guess when I look at the other teams, when I look at Chicago and I look at Vancouver, we're just talking about the best teams in the West. I can find big flaws in those teams, even for as much front-end talent as they have. And with the Kings, I don't see a big flaw here. I see an extremely deep team where you can literally run four lines, not just say that you can, and that fits Sutter's system perfectly. They have a really solid blue line, maybe the best defenseman in the game, and maybe the best goaltender in the game. I don't see the holes that I do, like with Chicago with their goaltending, or up the middle with Vancouver. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. You know what's funny, and I'm thinking as we're finishing up here, pretty much, is A lot of the years, I mean, there's a team or two that sticks out at me and go, I wonder if it might be the year for so-and-so to win the cup. I actually like what Vakota has thrown at us basically in his top nine picks, I guess, with Pittsburgh, Boston, Chicago, Vancouver, L.A., the Rangers, Philadelphia, and San Jose. I mean, I think it's right on with those picks. Did I throw in St. Louis? I would have to say that I would figure that the Cup champion would come from one of those teams. Is there anybody else that you would think from outside of those teams that could actually win the Cup?
No.
Nobody really pops out at me, but I would say that the winner would come out of that group of teams.
To me, there's no one outside of those teams that can win the Stanley Cup.
I mean, I think Washington is... I mean, we had them as our number one projected team last year, and I wouldn't consider them in the mix, for instance.
May I? Washed Uppington?
Right.
Washed Uppington?
I mean, I wouldn't consider... You know, what we were talking about there, I wouldn't consider Detroit. I wouldn't really consider Nashville. You know, you like some of the moves that Carolina made. I don't think they're quite good enough.
No. I think they might be good enough to get into the playoffs, but I don't think that they're a Stanley Cup team either. And, you know, and you could say the same for Minnesota, is maybe if a lot goes their way in a 48-game season, maybe they make the playoffs, but... You know, just bringing in Parisian Suter is not enough to fix all the problems that they have. Although, I'm interested about Grundlund to see how good that he, you know, turns out to be. And maybe he's a star, and maybe things go right. But the Stanley Cup, like, are they really going to beat Chicago? Are they really going to beat L.A.? You know, I mean, I know how hard it is to repeat. So, it's hard to say that maybe the Kings are the team. But, I don't know. To me, they're the most top to bottom solid team. I don't like to do picks like who's going to win this, that, the other thing, because I'm so bad at them. You're good at them. I'm bad at them.
No, but not, I don't know. But picking at this point in the season,
yeah, it's
possible. You know, if anybody, you know, pick two of those teams, just make sure one's in each conference out of those top nine teams. I mean, if I say it's going to be Rangers Blues Stanley Cup, or it's going to be a Chicago Boston Stanley Cup. I mean, you know, you have enough people throwing out picks like that. I mean, you're going to have a couple of them are going to be right. I don't have any kind of real insight as to, you know, which two teams out of that group of nine are going to be in the finals.
No, I think you're right. I think there's a clear line. I think it's obvious where it gets drawn. I mean, all the teams that you mentioned right there are the best. Because, I mean, like, even a team like Ottawa, who had a great year last year, but could you really see them winning the Stanley Cup? I mean, you could see them winning a series, and other than that. So, yeah, you know, anyway, that's all the teams, and we did it in time, Timo, for the season, which is great. And how about this, Timo? I mean, we talked about it a little bit at the beginning of the show here, but just... What are you the most excited about to have hockey back here?
I don't know. Just having hockey back, it was like confusing not having hockey back.
Yeah.
I mean, with just you know, certainly it's not I don't know, something that's every minute of the day for me, but it was just weird not having the games. You're kind of like, okay, we write the book, you know, we're immersed in this for several months over the summer, and then, okay, now what? Now we're kind of just treading water here. It was just odd.
It most certainly was odd, especially doing what I do, like, just, you know, what are we going to talk about today on the radio? Just, you know.
Buffalo Bills.
Right, and the Buffalo Bills are terrible, so now what, you know? For me, it's just talent. I've been covering hockey. I've been covering the American Hockey League, and it's been fun to see some of the top prospects meander through. Adam Henrik was really fun to watch, and, you know, he's a guy that just was on another level. Even Cody Hodson, to some extent, like, just the passing and, you know, how sharp his decisions were, how quick they were, I mean, and the sharp passes and stuff. And, you know, it's cool to see some of those guys. But it's so much fun for me to cover AHL players and then see them go up and then watch them play against absurd talent. You know, like, okay, Marcus Foligno, you're going to go play against Sidney Crosby tomorrow night. Have fun. See how that goes. You know, it's fun for me to see guys go up, and even covering the AHL this year with all the talent, there wasn't that buzz, you know, when somebody gets hurt in Buffalo and it's who's going up, and then, you know, a guy gets the call and he's still in the locker room and all that sort of thing. And, you know, maybe that's too specific to just me and my situation, but I think that, you know, being able to see the raw talent, I think everyone can appreciate just watching Sidney Crosby play and Evgeny Malkin play and Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. And just seeing the superstars back out there is, I don't know, maybe that's too easy to say, but I'm just so excited every year to watch the best of the best in every league. But, you know, in this one, I get particularly caught up in it because the superstars stand out so much to me.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with that. Now, I'm usually a downer, so I'm going to be a downer here. Can I tell you what I'm not excited about?
Please.
The fact that there's no games between the conferences. I mean, I'm, you know, when it comes to baseball, I mean, I think it's dull that they play so many games in their division. I don't know. I just think that, I mean, I understand it's only 48 games, but I frankly think that there'd be, I mean, I understand why they're doing it. I just hate the fact that you don't have the variety of seeing an Anaheim or a St. Louis or, you know, whoever, Detroit coming in every once in a while into the Eastern Conference cities. I mean, there's only so many times that I can watch the Islanders and Devils play or whatever combination it is. I mean, I understand it's supposed to be a rivalry, this and that, but, you know, it gets old to me.
My turn for what I'm not looking forward to. I'm not looking forward to Brendan Shanahan's stupid suspension videos. I thought that he came in with a lot of thunder and there wasn't much lightning to go along with it. I just thought that he talked a big game and then by the end he didn't really back it up. And then he comes out with the Rafi Torres suspension, which is really not consummate with the rest of the suspensions. And then we're right back to where we were to begin with. So I'm not looking forward to more wacky player suspensions. And I'm not looking forward to the fact that, I mean, I shouldn't say the fact because I'm not 100% sure on this, but I'm not looking forward to 2-1 games. I know some people like a defensive battle, and I can agree with that, but the power plays nearly were eliminated from hockey last year, and I want to see that change, but I really doubt it is.
We'll see. I'm curious to see. I mean, we talked about that here before on the podcast, but I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it's called. I mean, if there'll be any kind of mandate to call more penalties coming out of this lockout. I mean, it could be.
I hope so. Because I'm really not looking forward to some of the boring games that we were subject to last year. And even sometimes during the playoffs, I was kind of like, you know, after that Philadelphia-Pittsburgh series, that's what I want to see every single game. And I know that's too high of a standard, but I mean, that was exciting. That was the most exciting season or series of the whole season. So I'm not looking forward to low-scoring games or weird suspension videos. But other than that, I'm very excited about the season. So, and you know what? You know what, Timo, too? Well, let's end on this. Podcasts. Right? Excited about podcasts. You aren't saying anything.
I guess we'll have to do a couple.
We already have really long ones. We could say this, that going forward, they probably won't end up being this long because we won't have 15 teams
all. No.
We'll see what happens.
I can guarantee they're not going to be this long.
But we got plenty of good friends to get on the podcast this year and can't wait to talk more hockey. So, Timo, I've enjoyed this, but next time, less than 17 hours for these.
Yep. Definitely.
All right, Timo. I'll see you. And if you got this far, congratulations. Your prize is you got to hear good stuff. That's it. Hockey Perspectives Radio, Matthew Collar and Timo Seppa. Actually, Timo, your Twitter?
Timo Seppa.
My Twitter, Matthew WGR. That's the one to follow. Okay, good night.